Welcome back to Amplifying Us. This is a place where you can be inspired to act on and explore your own potential through the real, the raw, and the intimate stories of other women. Finding purpose and belonging for women, the confidence and the courage to act is not always easy. My guest today, Teresa Gatting, brought these concepts of confidence and courage to life for me 11 years ago. I had a purpose. It was the desire to build an organisation for women in the agri sector where their potential could be unleashed and they felt they belonged. 11 years ago, she invited me to lunch. I thought I was incredibly lucky that this powerful woman was giving me a couple of hours of her time. What I never anticipated was that this initial meeting would become a friendship and her influence would change me. We've had great fun together, getting lost on our way to Carmel on a straight highway, attending women's conferences, emceeing World Woman, weekend retreats where we've come together with other like-minded women to talk, to share, and bring about new ways of showing up in the world. Most of us know Teresa as a former CEO of New Zealand's largest corporate, a serial entrepreneur, a philanthropist. These are the very visible, the very public sides of Teresa. The not-so-visible side is a woman from her very first paycheck and by her everyday actions has always supported other women. She has the biggest heart of anyone I know. Generous, playful, caring, and a passion for sparkly shoes. She believes women standing in solidarity is the next way to shift the world. Today we're going to talk about feminism and capitalism, two concepts which don't always fit together, but are pivotal to Teresa's beliefs, where purpose meets profit. As co-founder of My Food Bag, she also has some strong opinions of the value of agriculture and horticulture to economies. Well, fantastic to see you, Teresa, in real life. We've had a wee chat through COVID, but it is lovely to see your face, and welcome to Amplifying Us.
Thank you, Lindy. Lovely to be here too.
It is. I thought I'd start with a story about actually how you and I met. When you were, you'd probably just stepped out of your role as CEO of Telecom and having a bit of a break, and you were asked to judge for the Rural Woman Entrepreneur Award, and I sort of thought, what does this woman from Telecom know about Rural Woman? So she did
my good research. Question. Fair enough question.
Well, I didn't really know you, did I? Cheekily sent you my research to think that might help, and then we had a little dialogue, and then I thought we were having a conversation. The next one, I was having lunch with you in your apartment in
Wellington.
In Wellington, with the gorgeous cat who had hair all over me, and you were asking me about my ambitions really for the trust, and you were amazing because you sat and you listened to me and I could feel myself just sort of talking all through what I wanted to do, and you were that beautiful listening ear, non-judging and sort of asking all the right questions that was helping really make sense of it by talking it to someone who I really didn't know. But I laugh about what you said to me when I left your apartment. Can you remember?
I can. I said to you that I don't know if I said anything positive as a precursor, like I admired you, which
you
I
did. You did.
You were brave. I might have said you were brave, but I said I thought you only had a 15% chance of success.
You did. You did. And I kind of left and I thought, wow. This is not so good. If Teresa Gatting thinks I've got a 15% chance of success, I'm really... But in fact, you motivated me because you allowed me to talk it out loud. And in fact, that 15% success, I think a few months later, you were invited to the launch of the Trust in Parliament. And probably by allowing me to talk through what I wanted to do, actually brought it to life.
Yes, I also gave you on the way through, you know, advice as I saw it about how to tackle it. So I thought it was a really important thing you were trying to do. So Chris, who you know well, is all 20 years.
Darling
will know
Chris.
That, yeah, darling Chris. Well, that she will know that if someone rocks up to me, and I either don't respect them or think that what they're talking about is, you know, just right, hopeless, I don't spend like 45 minutes with them listening and giving them my advice. I find a way to take myself out of that situation. So although I did close by saying, look, I think this is really hard, what you're trying to do, I was very captured by it because I think at that time I had either just started with Wool Partners or was talking to the, you know, Brian Lahore's of the world about it, and I'd already just got a sense of how male the ag sector was. Remember, I came from a towny background, from Rotorua, so not a big urban background, but not a rural background either. And, you know, you go through university, and Victoria University in Wellington was, in those days, even pretty gender conscious, although I'd been to Waikato, which wasn't quite so gender conscious. Anyway, so I thought that it was a really seriously important thing that you were doing. But I thought I thought it would be very hard to do because I thought the men who held the money strings wouldn't get it. But, you know, even back then, there were things, Dairy Woman, I think, had started about then. It was the start of sort of the burgeoning of female leadership in the rural sector. Mm. And also, of course, the iwi economy had started by then. And as we see now, Wahine Māori women are running the biggest iwis. And so it's sort of very interesting, the period in time. I think you probably were exactly the right time, any earlier and you wouldn't have succeeded, any later and someone else might already have done it or there wouldn't be such a need. So I think you were exactly the right time. And of course now, popping up on my feeds all the time or reading magazines like Shepherdess, I see the fruits of your labour sort of 10 years on. It's about 10 years, isn't it? Or maybe even longer.
10 years in September, Teresa.
10 years, yeah, 10 years. I see the fruits of your labour because I see sort of women from the rural sector going, well, if not who? You know, yes, we play equal roles in the farm and we can play, you know, stronger roles in leadership. And so I think that what you did, actually, you made it look easy in a way. And I know it wasn't easy, but, you know, getting all those sponsors on board, inspiring other women. And you'll remember that later when we were doing workshops together, you came to my apartment with Barbara, our dear friend who lives up in the far north, and you brought a lot of women, Lisa Sims, and women from your network.
And who's now our GM.
Yes, who's now the GM. And I realised that, you know, you had a particular way that isn't the way that a feminist urban liberal might speak. It's not the way a university trained whatever might speak, but it was very powerful in talking to your community. And I could see that you inspired them and energized them, and they got that you authentically, A, stood in your own power, and B, wanted to support them to rise in their own leadership abilities. And that's when I sort of understood perhaps a little bit more of how you'd managed to be successful or how you were managing to be successful, because for a while there, you seemed a bit like a one-armed paper hanger. You know, you're doing everything. You're doing the minutiae of it. You're meeting with ministers. You're meeting with, you know, senior people at the funding organisations, and then you're, you know, dealing with the woman, and when it got going like a train, and there was a while, I think, when it was hard for you to figure out how to resource it, what happens next. But, you know, that's what happens to all entrepreneurs, and that was an entrepreneurial undertaking, and that's what happens to entrepreneurs. You make it up, you see the vision at the end, you take the first steps, and then you sort of have to make up everything in the middle because it's partly situational, it's partly the resources you've got, it's partly, you know, what you see and can create. So very creative, and actually got going quite fast, because I remember the launch, which was less than a year after the meeting at my apartment.
No, it was 5 months.
Oh, 5 months. Okay, so less than 6 months. And so you invited me to the launch, so that was my first surprise, was that you really had got it up. And then
the 15% chance had doubled.
The launch was at Parliament, so it's like, wow. And then the Minister for Agriculture speaks, and somebody else senior speaks. I don't know if it was, I can't remember which company it was. And I thought, wow, Lindy has already put this on the map because she's already seen it in her head, she's created it, and now she's made it real for these people, even though it's only been, a few months since I told her, this is really hard.
So the reason for why I was going to talk about this story was not to go, "Oh, what I did." But it wasn't until the fifth birthday party where I invited you to come and speak.
I remember that too.
You also told me the story of why you thought I only had 15% chance. And you said, the reason I only gave you 50% chance, 15% chance, was you had no positional power. But the reason you were successful was that you had personal power. And I think this, what we're seeing now in the world, particularly with women, and particularly in our sector where women are producing food and they don't necessarily have a title, and yet that personal power is creating a massive difference in the world. And we're seeing it in the things that you and I have done together, like World Woman, you know, when we've hopped on the plane and gone to San Francisco, and those amazing women over there. The first time we went, the incredible young, I think she was a journalist, and you're involved with her now, and she had that platform where she was trying to bring voices across borders and boundaries for women.
And then Chantel.
2 years later, we go back, and she has just launched this amazing thing. And this is through, you know, the deep connection and the influence that she has had. So women are really working in quite a different modality now than, say, 10 and even 15 years ago.
Look, I completely agree with that. First of all, in relation to the agricultural sector, food is the new black, right? I mean, tourism has gone from hero to zero. And, like, I know this from, you know, one of my companies, my food bank, everybody... I mean, I'm on a call yesterday and the woman says, "I wish I was in the business of producing food." I'm going, wow, you know, this has been a long time since that was sexy. So, you know, it is the new black, and New Zealand sits at the pointy edge because we could feed 40 million people, right? We're only 5 million. We could feed 40 million. We could probably feed more than that. And that ability is so important, and treasuring that and doing that in a generative way, in a regenerative way. And so partnering with farmers and not having an urban-rural divide, which we can't have in the post-COVID world, is going to be the new normal, whereas there started to be quite a bit of us and them. I mean, New Zealand didn't used to have that because there used to be more mingling. And but, you know, as you get bigger and you get in your own, dare I say it, bubble, you're out there, old world of bubble, you know, you only know a life as an Auckland person sitting in a traffic jam, or you only know a life as a... you know, a farmer in, you know, provincial New Zealand. So I think that that's the first thing. I think that if ever there was a divide of, you know, sorts of women, Māori woman, Pākehā woman, urban woman, rural woman, this moment is not a moment for that. This is a moment for linking hands. And secondly, the social media platform. Look at us having this conversation. You know, you're in your...
Ikerahuna, farmhouse.
I'm at Waihi Beach, and we're not going, well, unless we can meet in Auckland or Wellington on the, you know, whatever the month, this meeting isn't going to happen. So social media platforms have changed everything. They have some bad deleterious consequences as well, but they have a good consequence, and that has brought the world closer together, and the quality of the technology's got better. I mean, Zoom's fantastic. You can break out into small groups, you go into big groups, it's, you know, it's egalitarian. And I realised that in the CEO calls, actually, that it made all the women who didn't live in Auckland feel equal. It really, really feels very democratic. Mm. And I'm country lead, but I don't facilitate because that's not a good strength of mine. I would like to be an impact player rather than...
you do, yeah. You're very much an impact player, Teresa.
And listen to everyone else's calls. So... anyway, I agree with you. If there's a time for personal power to come to the fore, but it's personal power that brings into collective push or collective consciousness, or whether it's Black Lives Matter or Me Too, it certainly isn't positional power. In fact, in that second conference, do you remember the woman who spoke when you and I got up on stage and sang our Te Reo song? The woman who spoke there...
Hold on. Let's tell the truth. I sang it, you stood behind me.
true.
But you did show up. You did show up.
I know more to run now than I did then. Yes, anyway. Oh, I was trying, Linda. Anyhow.
You were 100% supporting me. Yes.
The woman who spoke was the co-founder of Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
And she talked about the media in America two of the founders of the two women were the founders of Black Lives Matter, and she talked about the media in America looking for the next Martin Luther King. Mm. They couldn't see them as the founders because they were women.
I remember that.
And so what I think is going on in the world is this intersectionality, that, you know, standing with Indigenous women, standing with Black women, it's no white girl rescuer syndrome. You know, it's like women standing together. That's the next way to shift things in the world, because there's a whole awakening going on. The world is never going to be the same post-COVID, and we're in a blessed situation in New Zealand, but the world has changed forever.
Mm. So I was going to talk about, in fact, some of the things that you and I have been involved in together, and then, you know, you've brought them to life. You know, the World Woman event that we put on, where we brought urban woman and rural woman together. And I'll never forget that moment on stage when I said, so, you know, who are the food producers in this audience? And all these women came up, and there was that pivotal moment where women were looking at each other and understanding each other in a whole different way. And of course that gave birth to SHEEO, where we're and now again we are funding some rural women's businesses. We're funding Maori women's businesses, and that whole coming together as a sisterhood with an intention to create a whole different world is really coming to life, and it seems to be speeding up and exacerbating. And you've been incredibly pivotal in creating these changes in New Zealand and indeed the world, because I'm lucky enough to know all the other things that you get involved with and the support that you give to women around the world.
Well, I believe that if I had lives before that, if there's such thing as coming back again, I don't know if there is, but if I've had previous lives, I think I was a woman who suffered. I feel the pain and agony of women. I just do. And from quite a young age, I was determined that I was going to be financially independent. I was going to be able to make my way. I wasn't going to depend on the state, depend on a man. I was going to be able to, you know, and that was, my father was a feminist. He's still alive. He's 85 in the house next door here at the beach. And he only had five sisters and then four daughters. And so he was pivotal in you know, in our upbringing. We were very loved, and it was like, you know, girls can do anything. So, and I'm naturally a curious person. So I did extra subjects all through school. I'm naturally very curious, but I'm the eldest girl. And I believe that my management model could best be described as elder sister. You know, that is my, I'm not motherly. I don't have children. I'm not really motherly, but I am very bossy, and I'm sort of,
but I'm so queenly, bossy. Queenly, queenly, Teresa.
Yeah. Queenly. Chief girl. I used to be called chief girl. And when I became chief manager at BNZ, my sisters laughed because that was the name that I had as a, you know, like from about the age of five, you know, chief girl. And because mum had four children in 4 years, by the time the last one came along, I was having to help. You know, it was like I was expected to do things that perhaps a five-year-old wouldn't do if they were the only child. So I've always been very sort of felt, you know, I believe in the not-for-profit space or things that you're passionate about. Well, let's just leave for a moment whether you get paid for that or not. There's no difference whether you're paid for it or not. You should only do what you feel passionate about. And so if you're passionate about animal welfare, you do that. If you're passionate about environment, do that. Really, I've supported women's causes from my first full-time job, from my first paycheck. I've had direct debits to Women's Refuge, New Horizon for Women, things like that. Set up charities with my best friend, Margaret, that supported women's causes. And now do it in a much bigger way, both my time and my money. And now invest with a gender lens. Basically, unfortunately, I think there's a lot of men who are making other men wealthy, and I really don't choose not to. I really basically invest only in women-led businesses now. And so that feels like a natural evolution for me to bring together. SHEEO is great because it combines a charitable component with business, and, you know, bringing all that together is, you know, just, you know, it's been a great thing to be involved in. But, yeah, I can't think of anything more important, which is to support other women, because that's how we make the world a better place. It's really, for me, it's that simple. And whether it's educating girls in Cambodia, which I've been doing with Denise now for 10 years, And, you know, we have the potential to change the education outcomes for that country for girls in a generation, because what keeps them down is poverty, not religion. It's not, you're not dealing with 2,000-year-old religion. But now here comes the virus, and now the schools are shut, and now we're just feeding the families. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to pivot, you have to adjust, you have to stay positive and then capable of what happens. So everything from that to funding, you know, female entrepreneurs in New Zealand, and then Tree Sisters planting trees, women planting trees. So, and World Pulse, which is women from all around the world, particularly, you know, countries in Africa, using technology to share information. And I support, you know, a sister Zeph in Pakistan teaching girls to, you know, read and write and have an education. So I've got sort of a diverse portfolio, but the linked idea really is that I feel a connection with the people, and that I feel that it'll be joyful to be part of it. I never do anything that I don't think is going to be joyful, and that I can make a difference, and that it's making the world a better place through empowering women and girls. That's the linking idea.
Mm. I really want to acknowledge you for changing a belief in me, though, which you probably don't realise, but you taught me about the currency of money being an energetic thing that came back. And, you know, probably my upbringing, you know, was very modest, and I've always had to an idea that money had to go in the bank and you had to screw it all away for a rainy day. And, you know, through our friendship, you have taught me the power of investing in other women. I mean, I've always absolutely invested it in terms of my time and my energy, but actually physically investing in other women. And it's been a delight to flip the lens on really how we view and see money and the power that women can have. Even a few hundred dollars to another woman makes a significant difference. So I really want to acknowledge you for that. And maybe you could explore that idea that currency is literally an energetic thing.
Yeah.
If we bring it out, what happens?
I didn't know that, Lindy. So thank you for that. That's wonderful. Look, I actually think that starts back with my business degree. I majored in economics, and the idea of stocks and flows. It's a very basic idea, but I believe that most people are brought up to believe just what you said, that money's a stock. You've got the stock and it goes down, and then you've got less and it goes down, you've got less, and you've got to scramble to get more, and it's hard. And if you get less, you might not be able to get more and all the rest of it. So that's our scarcity model.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that model, you believe you never have enough. You can be a billionaire with that mindset and you still haven't got enough. You're still looking at Jeff Bezos going, well, I've got a billion, but he's got 44 billion. I mean, it's never enough. There is no enough. Whereas if you believe, as I do, that money is in flow, that money is a flow, it's not a stock, it's a flow. And so currency equals current energy, it's flowing. And that's the best way to think about money, that you're moving it around. I mean, the charity Woman Moving Millions is the right analogy, moving. And so you spend, you have, of course you have to save to make sure that you don't end up, you know, not being able to look after yourself, et cetera. But you spend, you invest, you give. Now, seriously, I believe that one of the reasons that I've ended up, you know, very well off is because from my first paycheck,
you gave it away.
I gave it away. I didn't wait until I owned my own home. Like, I gave it away. And it's come back to me tenfold. And that's what energy does. If you're a high energy person, you give energy to others and then they give it back to you and you're more energized. And the same with money. If you believe that it's a flow, it will flow back to you if you don't stop the current.
I think these ideas are really being amplified in the world, and we've seen them through the likes of SHEO and these other organizations that are funding women, supporting women. Women are purchasing from these businesses so we can shift the world. And I was really inspired by Ban Ki-moon a few years ago when he said, you know, food scarcity, water, lifting women, you know, empowering women, they're one and the same. If we lift one, we get it all right. And so the work that I'm doing is really helping women food producers around the world think and deal with all of these things at the same time as being profitable in their businesses and loved you know, what, you know, you and I were in the same room when we heard Vicky speak, and we were probably, our eyes lit up for totally different reasons. And, you know, what really got me was the story she told about the fishing venture that was now sustainable and meeting, you know, that need to that customer. And in a way, you've done this with my food bank. You've completely transformed the way that we purchase food, think about it, have it delivered to us in a meal. So food is also really a new currency, and particularly after COVID, we've seen this idea of people panicking with not enough food. Mm. And so this is another way I think that women are really going to change the world.
Well, I think that the first thing that COVID did was it stopped stigmatizing working from home. Mm. So suddenly working from home, which let's face it, no men did and quite a few women did, is okay. It can never be again. It's okay. I mean, AIA, the company I chair in New Zealand, nearly everyone's still working from home. It's like, and gosh, look at Melbourne, back in 6 weeks lockdown. Mm. And so that domestic sphere, which used to be women, and the work sphere outside the home, the very definition of it was outside the home, that's gone. People's ability to manage their lives, whether that involves children or their parents or their cycling passion or whatever, it's changed forever. It's no longer okay now to say, well, you must be in Auckland City for the meeting at that time. I mean, everyone's doing it differently. But, you know, consistently surveys showed 60% of people love working from home. And, you know, many people now have an ideal life. They work from home some of the time and the office some of the time. So that's just one small example of how what we need is the balanced male, masculine and feminine energies, and things that were seen as feminine and not for masculine, it's already shifting. I think that the other thing about food is, and why you and I both, I think one of the things we had in common that we both loved hearing Vicky speak, is we're both driven by purpose, but we're both commercial. So if you're not commercial, then you get into a human rights mindset or a travel mindset, but someone's got to fund that. And what I like is that edge of profit and purpose, because business essentially is a way of disciplining. It's a discipline around the use of capital and the use of resources. And if someone won't pay you for something, but they take it from you if it was free, how do you know whether it's got any value?
Yeah.
And so food production, my food bag, sheep and beef farm, is at the intersection of profit and purpose. And that's going to change the world, managing that intersection.
I absolutely believe it. And where we've been going the last 10 years is giving women the confidence to see that they are very pivotal in this.
Yes.
Not passive, that they can direct it. And it's phenomenal to see what's actually happening. I'd love for, you know, some farming women who might be listening to this to think about some different ways in terms of doing business, and maybe some, you know, new commercial partners that they could get on board, or some ventures. You know, if you think of my food bag, you know, you're getting your fruit, your veggies, your meat, all from local sort of suppliers. And somehow or other, we've got to amplify that to a sort of a global connection, so that there is real value exchange coming back to the producer, as well as the business that it's, you know, serving.
Well, as you know, we tried valiantly with wool and failed, but maybe it'll have its time again.
It has to.
But telling the story of the authentic story of producing the food and the people that go into it is part of it. It's we got so disconnected, I think, in the 70s and 80s, driving our cars to the supermarket, and where does food come from? And there's been a bit of a switch back. This is before the COVID lockdown, to vegetables, to gardens, to veggie pods, to, you know, getting in touch with the land, whichever way it's right for you to do that, with planting. And that's only going to accelerate. And that is that, you know, that again brings together the female sphere of preparing the food with the male sphere of hunting the food. You know, it's like it's not that regimented. It's actually going to take the hunting and the gathering skills and the marketing and the, you know, everything to to grow food, sell it without waste in a regenerative way, in a way that feeds us both physically and emotionally.
Yep. And provides, as we started this podcast talking about, the income for New Zealand.
And provides the income for New Zealand. Yeah.
I mean, we are absolutely reliant on that now to bring in the economic dollars so the rest of us can be educated and do what we need to do.
So I'm here today in my place at Waihi Beach, and this is the Bay of Plenty. And boy, it feels, I want to say, I mean, I know that unemployment rate's looking like it could be 9%, but the Bay of Plenty, it's like kiwi fruit's having a booming year.
Mm.
It's like cultivation and horticulture, and there's avocados everywhere. You know, it's like it feels fertile. It feels febrile. It feels like everyone is getting on. It's quite nice weather here at the moment, and getting on with creating food for us and for export markets. And those cruise ships aren't coming in, but every day I walk to the beach, the freight ships are coming in. They're coming into the Port of Tauranga. They're taking kiwi fruits, and you know, they're going off and whatever else they're taking. But anyway, my point is that's actually the real economy. I'm not saying it's not real that people lose their jobs, get made redundant, but I really believe that New Zealand is very entrepreneurial, and people will pivot their businesses. They will pivot. They'll find a way through this. But agriculture and horticulture have become very central to the conversation.
Yeah. Do you know, I just realised all the things we thought we were going to talk about, we've just done our normal thing. enjoyed each other's company. I want to come back a little bit to this idea of feminism, because I don't know if you remember this story, but early on, a couple of years into the trust, and I was being interviewed on Catherine Ryan, and she said to me, I think she referred to me as the rural feminist. And I got on the show and I said, I'm not a feminist. And literally I'd got off, and about 5 minutes later you rang me and she said, you said, Lindy, you are a feminist. And when we were growing up, being a feminist had a particular, was actually almost a stigma attached to it. If you were a certain type of female energy, if you were a feminist. And I think that is completely and utterly changing. But you were onto this years ago because you did feminist studies alongside your business degree.
Mm.
And I think this idea of what it is to be a woman who stands in their own power and is generous to other women and looks for equality is really, to me now, what the idea of what a feminist is.
Yes, I did. I've always read widely, and I was already reading feminist literature, you know, at 16 and 17, even before I went to university. And I always wanted to be financially independent. I love business. I love the intersection of money and people that business represents. And I don't understand anyone can say they're not interested in business. How could you not be? But anyway, some people aren't. And so at Waikato University, I did a business degree, but I also did women's studies, and I felt very isolated. There were very few women doing business studies. Linda Cooper was in my year. She was one of the half dozen women.
Chair of the trust now. Yes. Chair,
yep. And she was majoring in accounting, as most of the women there were. But she didn't say much. I was easily the most outspoken woman in that class by a country mile. Because when you're only half a dozen of 100, you don't say much, right? Mm. Generally speaking, it doesn't matter what you are. And so doing women's studies, there were many people doing women's studies, but no one else from business school. So I go from the converted cow shed, because honestly, these were the days when cow cockies were like, they were not the golden, you know, this was not the river of gold. This was like, what are you getting out of bed so early? It's like, that's a hard life. So anyway, it was a converted cow shed, truly. And then you cross the road to the main part of the campus. And I felt isolated at business school because I was so outspoken. But over there I felt isolated because I was a capitalist. I wasn't a politics student. I wasn't trying to change the system. In some ways I've got more radical as I've got older. But anyway, and so I really struggled because I didn't really fit in either category. So I haven't really got hardly any friends from those university days, and nobody from business school or feminism. The only friends I've got were people from the halls of residence, you know, like my friend Tanis, who has become an architect, you know. So, and John Savage, my ex-partner, who was an economist, but he was doing social studies, he wasn't doing business. So those two worlds that I was in, I've got no friends from those worlds from those 4 years. It was like I was, you know, trying to bridge something that never the twain should meet. And even now, it's an uncomfortable coupling. And one of the things I'm doing at the moment is I'm working to, I want to chair, to fund a chair in female entrepreneurship with a feminist slant, probably at Auckland University, although I haven't quite settled on that yet, because I believe that there's still so much power in this idea. First of all, I want women who do business to understand entrepreneurship, and in particular what that looks like when you run it with feminist principles, and that's amazing. And but also I want women who are never going to, or think they're not going to do business, to understand about money, to understand about balance sheets, to be able to actually be comfortable, because guess what, they might think they're going to be an artist or a singer or a social scientist, but everyone's going to be an entrepreneur before you and I are very much older, because institutions are going to change. And this working from home is just the start of it. So that's what I'm going to do. And because it's like, how do I now, apart from my own energy, how do I use my money to bridge these two worlds? And of course, I do think that me and a few of my friends would be amazing guest lecturers, because, you know, you could bring together the framework with the practicality. I could never have been, I have to always be doing something like you that's got a practical outcome, that's got a practical sort of application. So I think this bringing together of feminism and business is still in its incubation stages. It's not yet even really a thing.
Except for the last 10 years, that's what we've been doing, is helping farming women understand the power of themselves as women in their businesses, doing the budgets, doing the balance sheets, taking a more active role around the decision-making table. So there's that connection of how you and I sort of think in very similar ways.
And feminism by stealth is perfectly acceptable, and you don't even have to have that label. But I'm agreeing with you. I came at it the traditional way, the academic. I read all the literature. I've loved watching Mrs. America on Neon, which is, you know, Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan, the feminists, against Phyllis Schlafly. I mean, I just loved watching the best actresses of our generation bring that to life. And I love listening to Gloria Steinem when she came out to New Zealand a couple of years ago for the Auckland Writers Festival. So I love all of that. But also, I love in life, you know, woman coming at businesswoman actually going, you know what, there is sexism. Or woman who didn't think they were going to do business going, you know what, I'm actually good at this shit. I really like it.
Yeah. And you have, seriously, over the years that I've known you, it's been 11 years since I met you, watching you support women in all the ventures you've done. You have done a phenomenal job in bringing those ideas to life and making women feel comfortable around them. Thinking now, 15 years time, what do you want the world to look like? And what do we have to do now so we get there?
Well, I think there's still not enough women leading the institutions in New Zealand. I mentioned before that Wahine Māori are now the CEOs of the three biggest iwi, Ngāi Tahu, Tai Nui and Pūhi. And so I think, I don't know how many years after Treaty Settlements, is it 20, is it 25 since they started? You know, they were all male leadership, there's all male leadership. But if you go back in history, of course, Wahine Māori were very strong within the tribes. They had their own property and they had to give that up if they married a Pākehā guy. So it's in a way in their nature to actually have powerful women. That's part of their background. And I think we need to, I think Pākehā women sort of step up. You know, I think we have not yet been as successful as you should be with female CEOs and women on boards. And that's a mission for Global Women, but I think there's more that we can do there. We have a feminist prime minister, but beneath her, you know, there's on both parties, there's not enough fantastic women at all levels. It still looks quite male. And you know, the big companies in New Zealand, both the government departments, a bit bigger government departments, but even so, you know, when is our first female police commissioner going to happen? You know, all these institutions, they're changing. You know, could we end up with a black woman president in America? You know, does Joe Biden pick a black VP running mate and does he see out the term? I mean, like, we could be on the edge of a huge world shift for female leadership. So I agree with you that it doesn't have to be positional power. I agree that any woman can lead from their personal strength, passion, persuasion with an internet connection. Completely believe that. I think in terms of actually stopping the world fall off a cliff, we need to have 30% of powerful institutions, whether that's the IMF, the World Bank, the whatever, run by women. Because look at the woman who led countries in COVID. None of them were dickheads. There were some men who were also really good.
Yeah.
But almost of the top dozen countries, six of them were run by women because women didn't let their ego get in the way of the science. And, you know, they don't. Generally, they don't. Some women have big egos, but it's very hard to grow up with a woman because you encounter things. It's not like you're inherently a better person. I don't believe that. It's just that socialization means that you don't get to think you walk on water. Not many women get to our age and then think that we walk on water because there's been plenty of people showing us that we don't. It doesn't happen. Wealthy, privileged white men can get to any age and think they walk on water. So women have to show up in the institutional leadership domain as well, I believe, to save the world.
Mm. Well, Teresa, I'm really conscious of the time and thank you so much for this chat.
What a blast.
But I think we had come back and do version two. And yeah. Look, for most people, they would probably see, you know, you've had an amazing corporate career, an entrepreneurial career, a philanthropic career, and as well as all of the things that you get involved in. And they probably think, oh, you know, you're going to run out of steam soon. Quite frankly, Teresa, I do not think we've even seen the fullest expression of Teresa Gagin in this world. And not only in what you do, but in all the support and attention and the things that you create so other women can be successful, which is really changing the world. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for your friendship and your support of me over the last few years and the cool things we've done together. And I reckon it's time to do something cool together again.
I think it is. And Lindy, you're amazing. And I'm so pleased I was wrong when I told you, you've only got minority chance of getting this up. I'm so pleased I was wrong. And, all credit to you because you're making a huge difference as well. So anyway, it's been great to see you in this format and ka kite.